Everyone, now this is episode 16 of No Edit, which is astounding to me because this started as a drunken idea on a Sunday afternoon, and we are now here 16 episodes later. Thank you again for listening. If you are, last episode I had on Mallory Smart, and we talked about Black Car by Duncan Birmingham, and that was a great episode. Check it out. If you haven't had a chance yet, it's on Twitter. Well, the link is on Twitter. It's on Anchor, Spotify, and a bunch of other streaming services that I don't understand. Definitely please check out past episodes. This has been a fun ride, and I can't believe that we're already progressing as far as we are. And I'm especially excited for this episode because I'm talking to somebody that I wanted to talk to for a long time. I have on with me Troy James Weaver tonight. Troy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm all right. I've been drinking long before the episode now. I'm still going. I'm definitely excited. This was something I've been looking forward to all day. It's been a bad day, and I'm looking forward to having a good conversation.
Hell yeah. Me too. I've been looking forward to it as well.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to hear it for sure. Do you want to, for those who may not know you, and if you don't know, Troy, shame on you, but for those who may not, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you've worked on in the past, any books or what you're working on now, stuff like that?
Sure. I'm from Wichita, Kansas. Lived here my whole life. Written and published 5 books. Starting with Wichita Stories, and the last thing was Selected Stories, and then the reissue of Visions came out as well. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I remember reading Marigold. That was the first one I read of yours, and I just remember being blown away. Read it in one sitting, blown away. Thanks, great book for sure. Yeah, and I was especially excited to have you on because one of your friends suggested I have you on a long time ago, Mr. Livermush, Graham Irvin.
Oh, yeah.
He lives about 15 minutes away from me here in Philly, 15-minute walk, and he was like, you got to have Troy on. And I was like, no. So I was like, I know you two are pretty great close. Guy. So I was like, well, we'll get to that. So Graham's a great guy, friend of the show. Second episode I had him on. I haven't talked to him in a while. I should probably reach out to him. Anyway, Troy, since I have you on tonight, what story did you pick? What are we talking about?
Letter to a Young Lady in Paris by Julio Cortazar.
Cortazar. Okay, I was a little
confused. Well, I don't know. I think that's how you pronounce it.
We'll go.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, this was a great selection because I had read one of his stories in high school, and it's his collection. It's I'm gonna pronounce axolotl. I don't know how you say it.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know how to pronounce that one either.
And I read it, and it was one of those things where I was like, I really like this guy, and then I bought the book like later on in college, and I never read most of it, and then I did go through it, and I read this a long time ago, but it was good that you picked this because it I wanted to reread it for a long time, and so this was a great selection. So I guess before we get into talking about it, why this particular piece, like why did you choose this story for us tonight?
I don't know. I read it like,
'cause I know you were waffling back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, I read it like years ago. And it, I don't know, it just always comes back up in my mind as just I don't know, it's really effective in what it does, but it's also like playful and absurd, you know. I don't know, but also it feels like real, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're definitely gonna get into it for sure because there's a lot of great moments in this piece, and it's just like I said, I read it for the first time years ago, and then I reread it again the other night, and I was like, holy shit, like, this is definitely a sleeper. This is something that I should have been rereading a long time ago. And real quick, I don't know if there is a PDF of this story online. I usually like to throw a copy of the story online on Twitter a few days before I post this, just so people can catch up and maybe reread it on their own. I don't know if this is online. I haven't checked.
I think there is a PDF. I think
Is
I
there?
saw one. Yeah.
Okay. If there is, you might have to send it to me before I post this online, because I like to, because people might like to follow along. And if there's not, just buy the book anyway, because he's a master at what he does. I bought Hopscotch years ago and unfortunately never read it, but I have it, which is the important thing. So actually, real quick then, before we get into it, so since this is a part of a collection, why this particular piece? Since there's so many in
I mean, all the stories in it are great.
Yeah.
I think in the long lineage of like maybe like a story written as a letter, or even like in this case like a suicide letter basically. I don't think there's really one that's ever been quite as effective as this.
Yeah, definitely. Because sometimes when you get into letter stories, they can kind of be a little, you don't know how they're gonna go.
Usually I don't like them, but this one always just stood out to me as something special.
But
I mean, the guy's vomiting rabbits,
yeah, he is vomiting rabbits, and that was a great segue into how this kind of starts. So I'll actually let you set it up, since you called it something special. So how does this, like, maybe when it first starts, it kind of doesn't feel like something special. It kind of seems almost kind of cliche in the beginning, but then it kind of like really like amps up a little bit. So like, what, how does this, how.
It actually starts like kind of, it's like kind of like annoyingly like boring in a way. Like, just, and I think in the second line, he mentions like not so much because of the bunnies. And it's like, what does that mean? You don't know. But and like even some of it's like pretty pretentious. Like the music he talks about, the, like the classical music, the, being a translator, the it just seems like kind of like your
Your stereotypical kind of like
everyday
pretentious.
story like that.
I had the same. I like to make comments, when I read, because that was like the first thing I noticed. I was like, well, the bunnies line was like, wait a minute, what the fuck? But then, like, if you go on, like, he talks about like the heavy fluff of the powder puff and the talcum, the play between the violin and the viola. Like, this is definitely like a pretentious stuffed shirt kind of like, oh, I'm this important guy. And so, that kind of sets up the voice though pretty well, because it's like, you know what you're reading, you kind of get a sense of the character. You're kind of reading this guy who's like thinks very highly of himself. And typically if I see a story begin like that, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, what's this special? But he brings up the bunnies, which is the really important thing. Because if
And I think they like they play into like this. You're 100% right. Like it's like a it's set up like a kind of like a trope, of like this
It
like
is.
very studied worldly translator dude. He didn't want to, I mean, the first line is like he didn't want to move into his like girlfriend's apartment, right? And he's writing her the letter. And he's just kind of an asshole, really.
He kind of is. He's already placed himself on this pedestal. He's talking about the perfume and the sprouting of plants and the ritual of tea trays and sugar tongs. It's like, dude, you're kind of a bummer a little bit. But and he kind of goes on a little bit more. He talks about, English dictionaries and Mozart symphonies, and you're like, and he says, oh, I, and this is on page 40, if you're in the actual book. which I am. And I cannot bring my fingers close to a book, hardly change a lamp's cone of light, open the piano bench without a feeling of rivalry and a fence swinging before my eyes like a flock of sparrows. It's like, come on, man.
Like
this girl loves you and you're probably like shunning her because you're so pretentious. So you're like, at that point, you're kind of like, oh, where's this going to lead? But this is where the power of the story really kind of kicks in.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I find it interesting as it ramps up throughout, like how the ellipses start coming in, like he leaves off on thoughts and then comes back in, like, and then it always comes back in, but I'm, you know, writing this or I'm not writing this for this reason or, you know, but on page 42, I thought this was a interesting. He talks about his moving, you know, and why, like, maybe like moving in with her is like a problem or whatever. Like, and I'm cutting the sentence off in the middle here, but that Thursday was a day full of shadows and straps, because when I look at valise straps, it's as though I were seeing shadows, as though they were parts of a whip that flogs me in some indirect way, very subtly and horribly. It's like, dude, you're straight up, you're a crazy asshole.
He really is. He really, it's like, as you look at it as a writer, you're like, damn, that's a great fucking line. But then as a reader, you're like, what are you fucking going on about?
Yeah. But then I think that's the part, it's like on that page where he says he's going to vomit up a rabbit, or he's like giving the, you know, yeah, well, the first rabbit, like when he's going up the elevator.
Yeah. Let's set that up a little bit, because that's kind of like the big focal point of the story. I'm looking at page 40 and at the bottom of it, he says, but I'm not writing to you for that reason. I was sending this letter to you because of the rabbits, it seems only fair to let you know, and because I like to write letters, and maybe too because it's raining. I like the raining part of that line, but like the rabbits shows you, like, what the hell is this guy going on about?
Yeah,
oh, I see the line now. We're seeing shadows, as though they were part of a whip. Yeah, like, this dude, and see, the rabbits thing, I spent the whole story, I read it twice yesterday, and I read it once, and then I sat on it, and I went back in an hour, and I was like, is this, I'm trying to determine if this is more just like a physically or mental thing, like the whole rabbits thing. And I'm like, I enjoy this story so much more imagining it as a physical thing.
Yeah.
And so that makes this story so much more meaningful, because what if he actually is, and that adds so much weight to it.
Right.
I don't know how you. Yeah.
Yeah, I like thinking about it like it's really happening.
Yeah.
It's just like it's just like a great metaphor it can be interpreted so many different ways, but
it can. And it's just such a random thing to think up. Like, that, I know this is going to sound crazy, but like the only thing, like when I first read this, do you remember the scene from Airplane, or if you've seen Airplane, with where the woman is constantly like bringing up eggs? She's like, and they keep taking her out of her mouth, and she's just producing more eggs. Like, I kind of thought that, because like I kind of imagine him sitting here just popping up bunny rabbits out of his mouth. It's just such a weird. And like he goes on, like, when I feel like I'm going to bring up a rabbit, I put two fingers in my mouth like an open pincer, and I wait to feel the lukewarm fluff rise in my throat like the effervescence in a salheptic. Which I'm not a smart man, so I don't know exactly what that is. But
I looked it up. It's a mineral saltwater laxative.
See, there's no way anyone would know that but Julio. It's all swift and clean, passes in the briefest instant. Like, I'm just as you know, you're a writer, I'm a writer. We try to maybe go for like the most I'm trying to think of the right word, not evocative, but like you're trying to think of like the most, the biggest images that you can grab to try to get your point across. Like, what does this do for you as like both a reader and a writer? Like, is this work? Is this just like, holy shit, this is putting me in the moment? Or like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
yeah. This story, it's so I think at first when you start reading it, I don't think you think it's gonna work.
Right.
But as it ramps up, it like, and you understand what the rabbits maybe represent, like
Yeah.
overall, like I think it works beautifully, like
It does.
but like one thing I thought was interesting on 41 as well too was when he talks about the bunny appears to be content, a perfectly normal bunny, only very tiny, small as a chocolate rabbit, only it's white and very thoroughly a rabbit. I don't know. That like sentence to me is just like so weird. Like what?
Yeah. It's a very specific image. Like you look at chocolate rabbits as like a sign of your childhood, maybe like waking up on Easter morning and seeing the chocolate rabbit in your basket and seeing how perfect it is. And then you look at it and you chew its ears off, and then all of a sudden it's not so perfect anymore. That's what I got out of it.
Right.
And so it's just, but I don't know. That's just a sign of a good writer to like pull that specific image and just be like, this is what, I don't know. It's weird.
It feels like to me, like I think like some of the best writers just go for they just go for it. Like it's you could
Right.
tell in this story that I mean it's not like super polished or anything, you know? It's like
Not at
you could
all.
tell it's just riffing, you know, and
Yeah. Well, that was going to be a question I was going to ask towards the end, but I might as well ask it now. If someone were to write this story today and submit it to some, whatever magazine, do you think it would ever be like accepted? Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, because like this was like a different era where it was like you could get away with this kind of stuff and people would be like, oh, you're a genius. But if you were to submit it now to like, I don't know what, people would be like, what the fuck are you going on about?
No, totally. And I think that's like the state, honest, I don't want to get into the whole state of publishing these days, but
Oh, we, I mean, we
you know.
can. I mean, I'm not editing anything. We can just go unfiltered. I don't care.
I mean, yeah, people now they don't really like to risk publishing art, so they don't, you know. So,
Right.
but I this is like the highest kind of art, in my opinion. It's just
Oh, absolutely. This was actually, when was this published? I'm actually 1963 was the first was the well my copyright says 67 and then 63 by Random House. So like back in 1963, it was one of those weird times where it was like, yeah, there's experimental stuff coming through, but we still want traditional blah blah blah. And so I don't know, like the more I'm just reading passages as we talk, like, because I, like I said, I write stuff down, and the more I get into this, the more I'm like blown away by how strange it is and how, but see how well it works for 1963,
It really coalesces into, I don't know, like about the midpoint, I'd say through the story, you're like, okay, like I see what's going on, you know, this
Yeah, so like, yeah.
I kind of picked a fucking difficult story to talk about because there's not a lot of
No,
concrete
but it's kind of fun because we can sit here and like bring up, I don't know, like that's kind of half the fun of this whole thing is like picking moments where we can like, for example, I'm on page 43 where he's going on about he's vomiting bunnies and Andrea. Oh, well, this is on 42. He sets it up. He says, Abbott's Handria are concrete forms of rhythm, or that portion of rhythm which helps to keep us alive. Vomiting buddies wasn't so terrible once one had gotten into the unvarying circle. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? But then on 43, he goes on, with all that, I decided to kill the rabbit almost as soon as it was born. A little bit on. Do you know pity permits you to kill a small rabbit instantly by giving it a tablespoon of alcohol to drink? Like, how screwed up are you to go through these methods and this and have this whole methodology. And I think that is probably the strength of the story. It's maybe not so much what's going on, but this the strength of the development of this main character.
And it's like I was thinking about that specific part kind of in well, it's like it's all very interpretive, but there's so many angles you could take with looking at things like that. But I was thinking, like, what does this mean? It's like, what do the rabbits represent? Like, does he have like kids all over town, and he's like thinking about them, and they represent these rabbits that he vomits? You know what I mean? Or like, is it just his mental state? That the rabbits represent, like his like mental decline is becoming manifest in reality through vomiting rabbits, or it could be like all kinds of things, and then like to say like kills one, and it's like kind of it's like permissible or whatever. It's like like he's trying to kill a demon or something, but it's not a demon, it's a fluffy, sweet little rabbit,
I was just looking at this as just like general anxiety, like before you are trying to do something you don't want to do, like you just kind of suppress this thought. And maybe these thoughts, as many as they come, are like these rabbits who obviously multiply as often as they do. So I was just looking at this as a total mental thing. He's like, oh, I'm this pretentious, I know music, I know language, I know style, and this Andrea, she doesn't know anything. So I don't want to like. And actually, that kind of segues into my next thought, which I did have. He does mention Sarah, and Sarah is obviously different than
I think,
Andrea. So maybe
yeah,
that's the whole.
I think Sarah, I had a hard time like when I reread it. I think Sarah's the maid that lives at Andrea's.
Yeah, that was a
I
little.
at first I was like, is that a girlfriend or what is this? Or, like
Yeah, that was my only problem at first was I was like, who is, Sarah? But then like the more he goes on to it, I was like, it's obviously somebody he knows, and yeah, she must have a close relationship with Andrea. But
Because I think it's like on 43, when I went back and reread it, it's like when he's going to Andrea's, and he says Sarah was waiting upstairs to help me get the valises in, like he's like moving into the apartment. And I think Sarah was her maid or whatever. But what I, it's like at first I thought he's taking care of the apartment while she's gone, but then no, he's moving in because he's like her boyfriend or whatever. Because I was like, well, Sarah could just look after the apartment if that's the case. Like, I don't. But what's strange about that is Sarah doesn't like he cleans up after the bunnies, meaning to me, probably they're not real, because the maid doesn't see what, I don't know. It's such a weird story, but
It is. It definitely is. But I don't know. It's enjoyable because, like, you kind of want to know, like, exactly what's going on. And I kept going on, on the on middle of 44. He's talking about, I realized I could not kill him, but that same night I vomited a little black bunny, and then 2 days later another white one, and on a fourth night a tiny gray one. So like that. Regardless of whether you know or not what exactly is going on, it's forcing you to keep going. And that's just the sign of a great writer. That's the sign of a great story, is that it's you want to know where this winds up. And
And I agree with you. I do feel like his anxiety about moving in is I think there's it's like the bunnies are such a multi-layered kind of image and metaphor. It could mean so many different things, but I think definitely one of them is this anxiety manifesting itself for sure. And especially like as the bunnies keep coming, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a line that I had circled because I think this is a very big like a development point. This is on the bottom of 44 into 45 when she straightens up the bedroom between 9 and 10. I make noise in the living room, put on a Benny Carter record which fills the whole apartment, blah blah blah. And for the most part it is, because for the rabbits it's night still and repose is the order of the day. He's organizing like his whole life or
Yeah.
his whole daily structure around these rabbits, and it's like you still don't know if they're real, if they're fake, if they're imagined, if they're whatever. And so like that really shows you on the surface this story is so like terribly written. Like if you looked at it as a total like, oh, I'm reading it for the first time, but like for someone who I don't know, like I mean, we both have written stories. Like you obviously like layer this. Like there's a reason for this. And it's so strange because even now, like reading this now, like I'm like, oh, that doesn't work. But at the same time, I'm like, oh yeah, it does. Like that, I don't know. Does
Yeah,
that
like, yeah. No, totally. That's what I think so interesting about the story, honestly, is like as you're going, you just literally don't see how it's gonna work.
right.
That's
'Cause
the
that was my
appeal.
first thought. Yeah.
That's the appeal to me. It's like it's really interesting, but as it just like keeps going, at least for me, up until like the middle. Or like a little after the middle, I'm like, oh, I see, you know,
Yeah.
how this. So it actually is like, it comes across as like riffing, you know, until like
Yeah.
you realize like, no, it's like well crafted, because you can't come up with an ending like that without crafting it the way it's presented at the beginning. Yeah, like, so we're 45. But yeah, like so page 45, there are 10, almost all of them white. They lift their warm heads toward the lamps in the living room, the three motionless sons of their day. They love the light because their night has neither moon nor sun nor stars nor street lamps. I think he's kind of starting to like in parts of this, like he starts to kind of identify himself with the rabbits, right? Like it shows like the dark side of him or whatever, because they're part of him. So I think it's, you know, it's like he's mostly talking about himself, you know, a lot of the time,
Yeah.
regarding the rabbits.
Maybe it's one of those things where it's like he realizes he's so far above them that he wishes that he was like as not innocent, but like he wishes he was like them, so carefree and like not knowing these things, like not
Yeah.
having these feelings, just being, you know, like there's a lot of references in here. And I admit I had to Google him, like later on in 45, he's like, something quite different from wriggling in behind the portrait of Miguel de, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, Unamano. I had to look it up because I like
Yeah.
that shit, but it's like, wait a minute. Why would you want to know that kind of thing? Like, why not
Right.
be a rabbit and try to like just live a carefree, happy life, not knowing these things? So I think this is a guy just like way above his station. He's just like,
Yeah.
I'm just gonna just rant because that's me. And I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. It kind of reminds me of like so most of the things that he's referencing or that he like for some reason cannot not reference, like there are all these very highbrow things, right? I think there's a certain sense of kind of self-loathing in his. You don't see it in the text, but it becomes obvious towards the end. I think that he's starting to feel like he's given his life up to things that matter less than the reason why he's in this apartment. And so he's talking more about these objects and and restoring, like when the rabbits start doing damage, restoring these things, and but he's like not repairing his relationship or like himself. It's kind of like it reminds me of like Wittgenstein's Mistress, if you've ever read that book. Like it's kind of
Yeah,
about like
long time ago.
like the all that all that she had in that book was like facts or like history, and like everything else was gone or kind of and kind of like less important. Like you get buried in you get buried in what you're obsessed with, I guess. And in that case, it's history and classical music and philosophy and whatever. But like real people, it's okay like that they're not there. They don't matter, to you. And I think in this story, it's kind of the same. But he's starting to realize, he's starting to realize over the time spent there that he cares more about the order of her things, right, than he does about himself. And the things are like he talks about like a history book he wants to read, but he's like scared to fuck it up or whatever. It's one of the things about him in general as a writer to me, is he's very subtle, even when he's not subtle. He's subtle in what he is meaning to tell you. And I think there's like so many clues along the way. And I think that's why he's a great writer, is like he doesn't spell it out like at all, but like there's so many sensations that you feel. I feel like when you read a great story, the most important thing isn't understanding it. It is if it leaves you with a feeling, that you can't explain. I think that's what he does a really good job of. And this is a great example in this story, because there's no easy answers.
No, definitely not.
There's just inquiry into what the fuck he's talking about, but it's not bad. It's not like a bad inquiry. It's not like, I can think of so many writers where their difficulty is on purpose so you don't understand it at all, or like you're left cold and feeling nothing. I don't think that's this guy's purpose. So
Yeah, and maybe this whole story has no purpose. Because like it's just him just kind of regurgitating these weird thoughts that he's having. Like maybe none of this is actually like, I don't know, real. Well, he kind of has kind of like a little self-confession here on page 46. Says, Andrea, I don't know how I stand up under it. You remember that I came to your place for some rest. So maybe he's acknowledging he has some mental issues. It's not my fault if I vomit a buddy from time to time, if this moving has changed me inside as well. So he's kind of admitting it. And then he says, it's night while I'm writing you. It's 3 in the afternoon, but I'm writing you during their night. They sleep during the day. What a relief this office is. Like, I don't know. Like, I do like good stories that obviously you don't know what the fuck is going on. And this is one of those pieces where you're like, you can use your imagination. One of the things I ranted about on Twitter for the longest time was, I like to use my imagination when reading things. I'm so tired of being told what exactly is going on. Just fucking use your imagination. That's the whole point of fiction, right? Like imagine
Yes,
it. And
totally.
so like and so this to me, I'm like, this could be anything. And so when we're at this part later on down 46, he says, I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can to see they don't break your things. They nibbled away a little bit at the books on the lowest shelf. You'll find the backs repasted, which I did so that Sarah wouldn't notice it. So, yeah, I guess Sarah is the maid. But, like, this dude is so, like, ingrained in this fantasy at this point. Like, is this actually real? Is this actually, you know, just imagine? Right. Maybe he's so screwed up that he's, like, not moving in with her because he's afraid he's going to, I don't know, not hurt her, but, like, mess her up too. So, like, this, yeah. You read this begins as a love letter of sorts,
yeah,
and it just totally spirals into this screwed up. I'm not gonna say fantasy, but just screwed up. Like, and that's what makes the story work so well. Like, halfway through, I all of a sudden I screamed, I said, ah, and my fiance was like, what the fuck are you going on about? I said, don't worry about it. But I was like, no, like it's such a weird roller coaster of a ride that, like, even though I don't get anything out of this at the end, even if I look at the end and I'm like, what just happened? It's still an emotional moment, and that's what a story should do. It should be an emotional moment that you go through, that even though you don't have answers, you still enjoy the fact that you went through it.
Yeah.
That's my rant.
Definitely. I mean, like, for me, there's all of that. But it's like, you know, his, like, anxiety of cluttering up her life. And I think with his own bullshit, which he owns, obviously, just through being kind of pompous about certain things at the beginning, you start to get the sense of like, he didn't want to move there because he didn't want to clutter his space with himself, you know. You know, it reads as an excuse at the beginning, but as it ramps up, it's like, no, I don't want to, like, fill your space with my bullshit. And there's also another aspect of it, which I think is interesting, is the fact that he's a translator. I think could play, like, a part in the interpretation of the weird things happening. Like, maybe they're mistranslated, you know, and that's why it's so weird and absurd, you know. I mean, that's a stretch, but I've thought about that before, you know. Like, well, why is there a heavy emphasis on him translating, you know, and how, like, he can't translate what the rabbits represent because there's, like, no word, like, it's just a bad translation, you know, like, you know, the inadequacy of language when it comes to how you feel. Aspect.
I think that actually kind of sums it up.
Yeah.
It's just the inadequacy of language. That there's two people that obviously feel or have feelings for each other that they just can't find a common ground. They can't translate it because this is what this feels like. It just feels like a gigantic crash.
Yeah.
Between two people, because obviously you don't get Andrea's perspective. You only get his perspective, but, like,
yeah,
but it tells you everything because, This character is just so, he's so descriptive, and he just lays it all out. It kind of, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those weird stories that just, you read it on the surface and you're like, what is going on? But then by the end, it's like, oh yeah, oh cool, yeah, I totally get it. And that's just the sign of a great writer. And I know that I'm kind of, like, hammering that point into the ground, but it's just like, I don't know, it's because then he kind of goes on a little bit and just kind of, like, segueing towards the end here, this is on the bottom of 47. Now all of a sudden he starts getting into, my dear Andrea, my consolation is that there are 10 of them and no more. It's been 15 days since I held the last buddy in the palm of my hand. Like, are you over this? Are you not over this? And then all of a sudden you go on. Adolescence now and full of urgent needs and crazy whims, leaping on the top of bust of some Greek naked guy. Like, what the hell? Like, you're so, like, out of reality.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just a really, really good job of character development when it comes down to it, because it answers no questions, but it kind of answers all the questions at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, it's just, yeah. It's weird too, because after that part, or you know, he goes on into only 10, think of that little happiness I have in the middle of it all. The growing calm with which on my return home I cut past the rigid ceilings of the first and second floors. And then it dips into a different paragraph. Like, I was interrupted because I had to attend a committee meeting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, what, like, this guy, yeah.
It kind of starts, it makes sense to a certain point in the middle, like, or not sense, but like, kind of like, you're like, okay, he's vomiting rabbits. He's writing this letter to his girlfriend. He moved in, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He has anxiety, all this shit. And then it starts getting more disjointed, like, towards the end.
And that's what I wanted to talk about, because I thought that was one of the best, like, parts of it.
Yeah, me too.
So let's jump ahead then a little bit, because, you know, he enough now. This is on the bottom of 48. Enough now. I've written this because it's important to let you know that I was not at all responsible for the unavoidable and helpless destruction of your home. So first off, you're like, holy fuck, he is so screwed up in his whatever that instead of moving in, he just decides to destroy it. That's your first thought. And so then he says, I'll leave this letter here for you. It would be indecent if the mailman should deliver it some fine, clear morning in Paris. That kind of confused me a little bit. I don't know what you got out of it.
Yeah, I think he's saying, okay, so enough now. I've written this because it's important to me to let you know that I was not responsible for the unavoidable, helpless destruction of your house. I think he's just talking about him being incredibly mentally ill and invading the space that he deems like not like, I don't know. I don't feel like he feels like he's worthy of the space. And then I think the indecent, if the mailman should deliver it some fine morning in Paris, is him saying, because it's essentially like a suicide letter. And yeah, I think he wants her to find it at home in the comfort of her space without him there. Or something.
Yeah. And he goes on about, you know, the destruction. Like, actually, it turns out that it was the rabbits. They tore the curtains, the coverings on the easy chairs.
Right.
Of Gusto Torres' cell portrait, like we should care. Suddenly, they were yipping. They were crying like an Everly rabbits could cry. So it's all, you know, coalescing into this moment where you're like,
so he actually did destroy the apartment, because those are like,
yeah,
not real.
Right.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Day is coming. Maybe Sarah's getting up early. It's almost queer. I'm not disturbed so much about Sarah. It's almost queer. I'm not disturbed to see them gambling about looking for something to play with. Like, it's almost, I don't know. Like, this is such a weird, strange ending that works so well. Like, you just look at it as this bizarre, you had in the beginning of this story, I guess is what I'm trying to say. In the beginning of this story, you had no clue. You had no idea that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because it's written, as you said, or I said, one of us said, it is such a cliched trope beginning where you're like, Andrea, I cannot move into your affordable apartment because I am a weirdo. And then all of a sudden, you go from, as far as I'm, this is on the middle of 49, as far as I'm concerned, going from 10 to 11 is like an unbridgeable chasm. Like, oh my God, you're just, this guy is such a detailed, layered character. You can't help but hate him, but kind of like him at the same time because you want to know where he goes next. And that's just a sign of a great writer.
Yeah, and can I just finish that out with the ending here?
No, please. Okay.
So you read that. Okay, and then you understand 10 was fine with the wardrobe, Clover, and Hope. So many things could happen for the better, but not with 11, because to say 11 is already to say 12 for sure. And Andrea, 12 would be 13. So now it's dawn and cold solitude in which happiness ends, reminisces you, and perhaps a good deal more. That sentence is strange, but
it is.
So now it's dawn and a cold solitude in which happiness ends, reminisces you, and perhaps a good deal more.
Maybe he killed her.
This balcony over the street is filled with dawn, the first sounds of the city waking. I don't think it will be difficult to pick up 11 small rabbits splattered over the pavement. Perhaps they won't even be noticed. People will be too occupied with the other body. It would be more proper to remove it quickly before the early students pass through on their way to school. Like, I don't know. There's so many... I mean, you could read it like she's been there the whole time.
Maybe.
And that he killed her. But I think he kills himself. And the reason they don't notice the bunnies is because there aren't any.
Right. Right. It's a fantastic ending.
Yeah.
A fantastic, bizarre ending to such a bizarre story.
It's one of the weirdest things I've ever read, for sure.
It really is.
But for some reason, like, his language is convincing. Like, it is. You know?
And
so if like, you know, somebody else tried to write that, I don't think they could pull it off, for sure.
Right. This takes a very specific voice to do this kind of thing. And I asked that question earlier. It was going to be my question now, was, were this written today, would anyone pick up the subtleties? Would anyone pick up the multi-layered, you know, things going on? Probably not. They would look at this. Yeah. They would look at this, and be like, what the fuck is all this? And that takes, like I said, a special kind of writer to sit here and craft such a complex story where you read it on the surface, you're like, I don't understand anything that's going on. I just wasted my time. But now, as we're talking about it, even though I just read it twice in the last 2 days, the way that you read the ending made more sense to me than me reading it by myself.
Right on. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It takes, you know, I think about the story a lot. It's not my typical, like, stuff I read either, you know.
Yeah. It's for a specific audience, I think, because, you know, I think some people, like, look at stuff, like, from back then, and they're like, oh, I'm not reading this. But, like, he was one of the first to really kind of, like, bring the strangeness out and be like, this could be mainstream.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, like I said, he did Hopscotch, he did, you know, other stuff where it was like, this can be the new normal.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've read pretty much all of his books. He's just, as far as, like, weird stuff goes, like, he does it in a way to where it is very layered and complex, but the language is not, like, super strange, you know, like,
The language is simple, but the story is complex.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't And also, like, kind of absurdist. There's some, magical realism going on, and even surrealism, I'd say, in some of his stories.
Yeah, for sure.
But like, there's a sense that they make sense, whereas a lot of stuff like that doesn't to me. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you one more question before we wrap it up. You were torn between this and oh God, now I can't. Testament to
Gospel according to Saint Mark.
Yeah, right. So you were
Yeah.
torn between that and this. What made you pick this over that one?
I just like I don't know.
You just kind of went with it, yeah.
I just was thinking about it the day that I messaged you and said, "Hey, sorry, let's do this one instead."
Yeah.
Because I think I was kind of like grasping for what to talk about because I love so many stories that it's hard to like pick, but
Yeah.
this one came up again, and I was like, I don't think I'm sure there's a lot of people that know about it, but I don't think a lot of people really know about it, you know.
Well, no, I mean that's kind of half the fun of this is trying to highlight or showcase maybe some writers that some people don't know and some stories that some people don't know. And we've had on some fairly big names, like as authors, like we talked about Raymond Carver, we talked about Jennifer Egan, we talked about other people. But like some of the others like are a little less known. I'm not saying like he's a little less known, but like it's one of those names that you hear all the time, but you're like, I haven't read anything of his. So like, I think this was a great idea because this is a very specific story in that like, if you're not reading it with an open mind, you're going to be totally confused. But like, if you do dive into this, you might be surprised. And I think that's the whole power of this whole thing. You know, it's like,
And
like,
I think also I was going between Borges and Cortazar because I think Spanish speaking translations are not like really talked about a lot maybe. But I think they're two of the best writers like ever. So
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talked about Borges in a previous episode. We talked about the Library of Babel. I don't know if you listened to that one, but that was a good one because that was a
I
very
didn't
multi.
who'd you talk to with
That
that
was
one?
a I had Derek Maine on. We talked about the library
Okay.
or the Library of Babel. Yeah, I
Yeah, I
think I
like
got that.
Derek. He's cool.
Yeah, Derek's a good dude. We had a great conversation about it, and that was it really made me like think about it, and that's it is one of those things that. You hear the name and you're like, oh, I don't know anything about that. But it's like if you just took one moment and just like read a story,
Yeah.
like you realize how powerful it can be. And that was a great conversation. That was a while ago.
I'm gonna check
But
it out.
yeah, go check it out. It was a great
All right.
conversation. So I'm gonna ask you one more question before we wrap it up.
Yeah.
If you were to pick another story from this collection instead of this one, what would you pick? If this was already talked about, which one would you go for, or would you just go for something else entirely?
Probably Continuity of Parks.
Okay.
It's really good. And it's only like 3 pages, I think,
Okay.
3 or 4 pages. But yeah.
Yeah, I just saw it's only like a couple. I'm gonna have to go back and reread that now because, like I said, I read this a long time ago. Yeah, it's only 3 pages, two and a half.
In my opinion, Blow Up and Other Stories is one of the heavyweights of short fiction in the world,
Yeah,
the whole thing. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I can get that because look at some of the guys from back then. Some of it can be a lot like really boring and just kind of like whatever, but like this is definitely a contender for good shit for sure.
Yeah, it's great.
So do we have any other final thoughts about this that we want to share before we like wrap up? Like anything else that you want to maybe give a shout out to, promote, or just talk about the story in general?
I don't know. I think we covered it. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's a hard story to talk about.
But it is. But I think we did a decent job talking about it. Yeah. And hopefully, we convince some others to kind of dive in, and you know, and that's like I said, that's the whole point of this is to try to highlight some different stories and different writers. But I'm really glad that you took the time to talk tonight. It really means a lot. So I hope you had fun, and I'm glad to have you on. Yeah, it was great. I'm glad to have you on. Well then, I guess that's kind of wrapping this up. This was episode 16 of No Edit. We talked about A Letter to a Young Lady in Paris by Julio Cortázar. You said it earlier. You said it pretty good.
Cortázar.
I'm terrible with that stuff. I had on Troy James Weaver. We talked about Letter to a Young Lady in Paris. Hopefully you'll buy the book and just read the whole book. But, you know, try to search for this story. Troy, thank you so much for your time. As I said, it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Thanks. It was a good time. No problem. It was a lot of fun. I have no idea who's on next. We will figure that out. But for now, thank you again for listening. Take care and have a good night. Thanks.